Hello, Blenders, and welcome to Real Blend, a podcast that drinks with its fans.
Hey!
Sometimes. On very rare occasions, we do.
That was one of your weaker ones.
Oh, come on! Yeah, we drink with our fans!
The pun, though. Where was the pun?
There wasn't a pun this time. It was just, I'm excited that we met with our fans.
This is true. Maybe because the moment with the fans was so good, it didn't require a pun to be elevated.
Maybe.
Puns help.
The puns do help.
I do appreciate the cheesiness of the puns each week.
Well, I like that
you usually kind of come at us with
I consider it to be clever wordplay. It's like Hamilton.
It's better than
which Sean doesn't like. We learned over this weekend.
Sean O'Connell, I'm the managing director here at Cinema Blend, and this is episode number 42 of our weekly podcast. We are not on the Facebook page, but even better than that, we are live and in person in London, England.
Hot damn.
Joining me, as always, but rarely in person like this, is Jake Hamilton of Fox 32 in Chicago. Jake, hello, sir.
Two-time Best Hair Award winner, Jake Hamilton.
Your hair looks amazing right
now. Hey, thanks. Say more nice things.
And, of course, Kevin McCarthy of Fox 5 in Washington, D.C. BDK!
Who also has great hair and doesn't get enough credit for his hair.
He really deserves
it. He pays a lot for his haircut.
Some type of award.
I do pay a lot for my haircuts.
I do $12 Tuesdays at Supercuts.
Right. What? No, you don't.
Swear to God.
There's no way. No, dude. You don't.
Swear to God. I go to Supercuts.
No, you don't.
Swear
go
to God. Hand of the Bible. Swear to God.
I go to Supercuts.
I literally have the Supercut app on my phone.
My tattooed lady does not make my hair look as nice as yours does.
I swear, I do. I have the Supercut app on my phone.
Wow. I assumed that both of you guys pay top dollar.
No, he does fancy haircuts.
I have a very strange association with Supercuts.
Right.
So when I grew up in Newport News, Virginia, off of one of the main roads,
yes,
there was a Supercuts that was connected to or right next to a Subway. So every time I got my haircut, it smelled like a Cold Cut Trio, which was like I'm being serious. Like Cold Cut Trio is a very famous sub that Subway has.
Yes.
So it smelled like bologna and ham. Like so every time I hear Supercuts, I immediately think of Subway.
That's hilarious. Thought that was the alternate name for this podcast, Cold Cut Trio.
Cold Cut Trio. Dude, Cold Cut Trio is my jam. I actually had one the other day on the way to...
I've never heard of it.
And by the way, this is not sponsored by Subway. But on the way
but
to...
But Subway, if you'd like to sponsor
yes.
us,
if you'd like to,
please contact
We're
us.
Game.
On the way to Edinburgh for Outlaw King, I did get a Cold Cut Trio.
In Scotland?
No,
in
the D.C. airport.
Oh, all right.
It reminded me of Supercuts.
That's kind of
so,
I guess.
Full circle.
We are in London. You guys might not have realized there's a different energy to this podcast this week because the three of us are sitting around the exact same table in a hotel room in London, England. We are here for the Bohemian Rhapsody junket. We saw the film. We did interviews. We're going to talk about this in a little bit. There's a lot of stuff that we're going to get into this week. We're going to have news. We're going to have a report from the first ever Real Blend fan meetup.
Yes.
We were so thrilled.
Thank you.
To have some people come out.
Once we get going on it, it's going to get me emotional once we start talking
yes,
about it.
Yes, it was fantastic.
Jake's been crying in the bathroom for an hour.
Well,
We couldn't start the podcast for an hour because Jake's been crying about this. So
I cry about a lot of things.
I want to get to, hold on, you guys fill time for a little bit because I'm trying to get to our reviews.
Yeah, so as Sean said, we are in London.
Yes.
I was in Edinburgh. I saw Outlaw King. I did interviews with Chris Pine and Aaron Taylor Johnson. So that's been part of the trip so far. We all met here in London. Jake flew in for Bohemian Rhapsody. We saw Bohemian Rhapsody last night here in London.
Yep.
We all sat down with the cast today, as you mentioned, including Rami Malek. We just actually came from a massive event on Carnaby Street.
Where Rami pointed at one of us.
Yeah.
I think he pointed at me.
I think he pointed at me, Jake. I gave him the rock on sign.
I pointed at him, and he pointed back.
But I gave him the rock on sign.
The point is not a response to the rock on. The point is a response to the point.
Yeah, but just to give...
You point to respond to a point.
To
pointed
give
at me.
To give perspective of where we were on Carnaby Street, and they do a very famous lighting every year. And the lighting this year was themed for Bohemian Rhapsody with the lyrics from the famous Queen songs. Roger Taylor and Brian and May were two original members of Queen.
That was
a drummer and guitar player were there to hit the button to light it. Rami Malek, Lucy Boynton, the whole cast was there. So we literally just came from that.
Yes.
And now we just ordered room service. I had butter chicken. I think Jake had fish and chips. And
yes,
Sean,
because I'm in England.
Sean yes. had nothing. So
I didn't have anything.
Yeah. So we are. You ate a lot of wings at the event, though.
Oh, so many wings,
yeah.
Which is a problem. But we start our podcast as we like to do with reviews. I will catch everybody up to the fact that we are up to 58 star ratings with 100 as our goal for December 31st. Jake has sworn that we will not reach that point. He's looking pretty good right now.
We're not going to.
Everybody else might let us down, but we are at 58 and we're going to climb. We have two new reviews to read this week, and I want to point them out. This is from Baz Lal, who says...
I think you were going to say Baz Luhrmann.
Baz Luhrmann.
I was like waiting for you to say it.
He said, this is fun to listen to. He said, lots of fun, great movie reviews and industry news, awesome discussions, wonderful vibe. Love these guys. So thank you very much, Baz Lal, for posting well this. Well
done. Thank you. Thank you.
This is from someone, and I want to point this out because this person, their name is Real Blend Hiring. And unfortunately, yeah, we're not.
I mean, I do threaten to quit.
You can't replace you with Israel Blend Hiring. But he asked a question that I actually have the answer to, so I want to get to this in a second.
Oh, yeah, I know this.
Who released Michael Myers from prison? So this is somebody who obviously is referencing the new Halloween film, but this is their review. Dear Real Blend, thank you for making my Northern Virginia commute enjoyable over the past few weeks. I first heard of this phenomenal podcast through Kevin McCarthy, who makes frequent appearances on Washington, D.C.'s 106.7 The Fan. Kevin's film analysis, coupled with his enthusiasm for cinema, led me to Real Blend, and I cannot stop raving about you guys. I've enjoyed hearing your opinion on Halloween, First Man, Venom, Bad Times at the El Royale, and A Star is Born. Hold on, I gotta click more. Despite all of these great movies, I'm eager to see the latest adaptation of the Halloween franchise. In preparation for this week's release, my girlfriend and I have rewatched all of the Halloween films, excluding Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. And I wanted to ask you a trivia question. In Halloween 5, and I have the answer to this, but
did
I want to
see... Did you know the answer?
No, I had to look it up. But I do know the answer, and I will see if you guys know it. In Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers, Michael is captured and detained by the Haddonfield Sheriff's Department. Michael isn't held for long as a lone gunman dressed in black opens fire on the station and releases the shape. Who is responsible for Michael's release? Your friend, Casey.
I have no idea.
This is Halloween 5?
Halloween 5.
I've never seen Halloween 5, so I don't know, so unfortunately.
4 Revenge is of Michael the Myers. Curse of Michael Myers.
Season of the Witch is 3, right?
That's the one without Michael in it.
Correct. It's more like an anthology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, if I could just...
your friend Casey.
Make a little pause in the podcast here.
Of course
here,
you can. Yes.
Because no one else will understand this, because this is going to be happening as we're talking.
Do you know this person?
No. This is about our producer, Gabe.
Oh, yes.
So we have made a great practical joke on our friend Gabe, yes, that we are very excited about.
It's playing out in real time.
It's playing out as we're speaking right now.
Are we?
Okay. Yeah, no, you know what the joke is. You just sent him in the email.
Oh, yeah.
So... while we are not going to inform you what we're talking about until later, basically we have been we've been waiting a few hours to do our podcast, and Gabe has been waiting for our audio. So, because we started late, which was just now as you're hearing us.
Which is, okay, in case you're wondering, it is almost midnight London
right
time.
We're supposed to start at
3 o'clock this
3
afternoon.
And then that got moved to 9.
They got moved to 3:45.
Now it's midnight.
And they got moved to...
So, as we speak, Sean has sent a fake audio file.
Yes.
To Gabe of what our show was for this week. It was very professionally labeled, Awards Blend 42.
Yes.
So we're just...
The deep dive.
We're
so
waiting
for our 500th follower on Twitter.
We will announce
send
what
you
this
that
is.
We will send you the audio of the fake show that we sent to Gabe. So let me, in the meantime, answer the question.
Wait, before we go, so right now we're on a group chat. It's Jake, Sean, and Gabe, and myself. And we are telling Gabe that, hey, we had such a great show tonight, which we haven't done yet, we're doing right now, that it was...
And poor Gabe believes
us. Yes, the beauty of it, we're doing,
knows us better,
we're doing so many puns in the text that only we get, right, that clearly he has no idea what's going on. So Jake just sent this beautiful message saying, make sure the audio works before we go to sleep. which is just the perfect reason for him to open it up and listen to it.
Because normally he wouldn't listen to the audience
until
the next
tomorrow.
Day.
And we don't want
the argument being that we're all together, right. So we only have one shot to do this.
And we don't want this audio to come in later tonight and him not to click on the joking one. So 100%. We will keep this updated, but yes, continue, Sean. Halloween 5.
Our 500th follower is going to get this audio.
Yeah.
I will literally hold on to this audio clip until we get 500 followers.
I will hold on to this audio clip until my deathbed. They're like my future wife and kids and grandkids and great grandkids are going to come to me on my deathbed and they're going to be like, Jake, any final words?
Yeah.
And my shaking hand is going to hold up my old phone as I press play and it's going to play the audio that we just sent Gabe.
It's pretty brilliant.
And if that doesn't intrigue you, then why are you listening to this show?
5 seconds of genius.
To answer the question of who released Michael Myers in number five.
The question intrigued me, but I don't know the Halloween mythology as well as I know.
I had to cheat. But so, I found the answer.
So speaking of release, give us the answer here.
Speaking of release, the answer is, for your brilliant Halloween question, the answer is Dr. Terrence Wynn, who is a doctor who worked with Dr. Loomis and went into the hospital during the timeline for Halloween 4 through 6 and fired on the doctors in the hospital and released Michael Myers.
Interesting.
Dr. Terrence Wynn. There you go.
Win for the win.
He is the leader of the Thorn Cult. So I actually found the answer for you.
I just wish we had a camera.
And we cannot appreciate the question that you sent more.
Yeah, seriously, thank you for sending that.
I love the review. I love the question. I love everything about it. So we are going to dive into so many different things this week. We're going to talk about Bohemian Rhapsody, which we all got to see.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about underrated horror, which is this week's blend. Underrated
Keeping
horror
with our
blend.
Halloween month theme.
Of course, and then I have a new blend, actually, that Gabe put in that is a killer blend for the next time.
Killer Queen?
It is a killer blend. I mean, and I think we even might have discussed it potentially, but you guys probably forgot what it was. So let's get into this. But first off, I want to bring up Halloween box office. Because we talked about the fact that Halloween was opening last week, and we talked about the fact that it could do really well, probably better than Venom. Halloween opened to $77.5 million.
Huge.
Didn't quite break the record that Venom posted, but to have two October releases getting close to $80 million is staggering to me.
But it is the second highest horror opening of all time, right?
And the opening weekend, didn't it make more money than any Halloween's made ever?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, an opening weekend.
It's a dominant.
And it's also the biggest opening for a film starring an actress over 55.
Oh, really? No kidding.
That's
awesome. I didn't even think about that. That's really cool. Yeah, I think that's a great statistic. So,
and the number one horror opening of all time, clearly, is It.
I don't think anyone's scoffing at it. I mean, I saw the film, it cost like $15 million or something.
Is that
like
what it costs, really?
It didn't cost a lot. Yeah.
No, it's not a lot.
And I can't imagine Jamie Lee Curtis is
inside of it.
Is charging a lot these
days. See, right. I bet Jamie Lee Curtis went the smart route.
Points?
Yeah, that's the way you do it. I remember reading the Arnold book about like his career and
always take back points, dude.
I think the most money he ever made on a movie, I believe, don't quote me on this, was Twins, because he took the minimum up front and took the back end of the percentage.
Nicholson did that for Batman.
And you make more money than you would be offered up front, especially if your movie does well, clearly. Like I'm sure Twins.
So you think Curtis did that?
I don't know for sure, but I mean, if Jake is saying, let me look up the budget, because if Jake is saying the budget is $15 million, it's actually $10
million. Oh my God.
So the budget for
million.
Halloween 2018 was $10
million. Right.
So clearly, Jamie Lee Curtis did not take a.
She's making a fortune.
She's making a fortune on the back end.
Right.
I would imagine, because that movie, I'm actually shocked they made it for that little.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I mean, but
$10 million.
What would that movie cost anything? There's nothing in that movie that costs a lot of money.
Right. You know why? Because this is Blumhouse. Blumhouse is so...
Dude, when we interviewed John Carpenter and Jason Blum...
Yeah.
Blum. They joked about how cheap he is. Like,
yeah.
He has a reputation for... But also, like...
David Gordon Green doesn't spend a lot of money on his films either.
Also, that movie didn't look expensive. It didn't look cheap.
No, yeah, right.
I am shocked it was only $10 million, though. That is actually pretty...
Right.
So get this. This still blows my mind. Paranormal Activity, which was a Jason Blum production...
Right.
...cost $15,000 to make.
Oh, my God. Wow, really? How?
Jesus.
You ready for this? Worldwide box office... $193 million.
That's insane.
What's the percentage of profit on that?
I'm like 7,000. I'm just gonna say 7,000.
So you're talking about that doesn't seem
accurate. No, it's not accurate at all.
You're at a $15,000 budget. You make almost $200 million worldwide.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so add another 17 on, double it for like publicity.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
But still, all it was that night vision camera.
Paranormal Activity publicity was just shock of like people viewing it in
a
theater.
True. That's true.
It's probably the cheapest marketing campaign ever.
All right. Well, let me ask a spoiler question. And so if you haven't seen Halloween, punch away right now. I'll give you 3, 2, 1. I'm going to talk about spoilers for Halloween right now.
Okay.
The way that it ended, it is perfect closure from my perspective for the franchise.
No.
It brought Laurie's story to a conclusion.
No, it didn't.
You don't think so?
That's
why?
My problem.
Explain.
That's my problem with the film.
What? She killed Michael.
No, I mean, she did not.
But I get that shot in there for a reason. No, I know, and I get that like nobody
also,
dies in horror movies.
And also the shot of the granddaughter holding the knife.
Right.
And
like,
also
the shot has been passed.
Of Myers no longer being in the fire.
Well, that's the shot I was talking about. They put that shot in
the movie. So they cut back to the basement
and he's not there.
But it's closure. It should be closure.
It's the equivalent of in Halloween, Loomis going back to the balcony, looking at the front yard, and he's not in the front yard anymore.
Which is beautifully referenced in this movie. With Jamie the Curtis over the...
So exactly what you're saying is my problem with the new Halloween movie.
Really? Oh, elaborate. Please elaborate on this, because I want to hear your...
Because I want to hear Jake's perspective on this as well. My problem with the Halloween ending... So, first of all, there's a lot of things happening here. Again, we are in a spoiler discussion.
Spoiler conversation, so please bail out.
So...
Well, don't bail out. I mean, it's like, stay with us, but like...
We're talking about a book-ended film here, okay? Halloween 1...
Yes.
Halloween.
Carpenter.
This is also called Halloween.
Yes.
2018.
Because there are already two other Halloween 2s.
Right.
This is the third Halloween 2.
It's a very confusing timeline.
So my perspective on this is, and this is just maybe just me based on my perspective, you're dealing with a movie that's 40 years later.
Yes.
The impact emotionally on what this has done to Laurie Strode and her family over the 40 years.
She has PTSD.
PTSD. Has a 100%. Grandchild. Has a child.
Yeah.
So you're naming your movie Halloween, which is also the name of the original film.
Right.
My perspective on this is you're bringing it back. Why not fully give us the closure as fans we deserve?
Okay.
My point being is that the ending to me is a business decision, not a storytelling decision.
Okay.
I'd argue the entire movie is a business decision.
Let me get it. Actually, I disagree with that because David Gordon Green was the one who came up with this idea before any business was involved.
Yeah, but Universal paid for it.
Right.
Because they thought that we would all come out and...
But my point is the initial...
Clearly, people did.
The initial idea of this movie came out of a movie that David Gordon Green was making with Jake Gyllenhaal called Stronger.
But here's the thing. All movies come from great ideas, but they don't happen unless someone says,
I know.
Business, from a business perspective, this is going to make money.
But let me finish this particular thing, because I think...
I get your point. I know what you're going
to
say.
The thing that David Gordon Green wanted to do was completely forget about the sequels,
right?
Which she died in.
Yeah.
And bring back this classic, iconic character for a face-off. And...
See, I disagree. I don't think it was ever presented...
Chase-off?
But
it was. I never interpreted this movie as this is the end of the story.
Okay,
I was never sold. Well, I was never sold that this is like the ultimate face off.
Let me ask you this:
were you, Sean?
No, because I believe that if Universal bought the rights to continue making these movies, they're going to continue to churn them out.
However, everything you're saying is business.
However,
not
when
stories.
I watch
these, are it's
no,
show
no.
business
story. Like I'm telling you right now. Story
horror movies.
There's no reason we could not have had closure here. Why couldn't we have had?
Because this is the 11th Halloween movie.
Why couldn't there have been the three generations of Strodes?
Yeah,
decapitating him, destroying him, fully
complete. Think about what you're saying. This is the 11th movie in a series, and it made more an opening weekend than any of the previous 10
right,
made.
But here's the thing.
My argument is that the ending was not a story
not
decision. It was a business.
Works.
But I have a problem with that.
But horror movies have done that for an eternity.
I have a big problem with
Freddy
that.
Freddy has lived forever. Jason has lived forever. Michael has lived forever. That's how these things work, dude.
Right, but I'm with Kevin in this one, and that if you're going to bring it back for this reason.
And call it Halloween.
Did they bring it back for this reason?
Well, I don't know.
But I did not go into this movie thinking this is the end all be all.
But it should be closure.
That's exactly
what it
says. Who?
Because you're completely forgetting the sequels. You are bookending your movie, Halloween to Halloween. You're 40 years later.
But
three generations
of
strokes.
Nothing in the promotion promised me an end to the story.
No, not at all. No,
no, like, the entire movie is about her trying to end the story.
Yeah. The entire series is about her.
No. But none of that ever existed. Halloween is the only movie that exists before this movie.
My
point is, if you watch the movie again, which I know you've seen it once.
Yes.
The entirety of this film is literally Laurie Strode praying that Michael Myers gets out so she can finally
kill him. Which the fact
that
they're transferring him on the eve before Halloween
right.
is ludicrous.
On top of all that, she has planned. Hold on. She has a freaking kill room. She has the entire house set up. The entire film is leading to this moment that she is going to end this. And we are given an ending that is,
a horror movie ending.
No.
It is a horror movie ending.
Nothing happened. She didn't. Nothing. The guy's not dead. We all know that.
Here's my complaint about the ending. Not so much that it leaves him alive at the end, in theory.
Completely alive.
The entire movie spends 2 hours telling us that she has spent 40 years building this strong.
That's what I just said to you.
No, you're talking about it from. I don't mind.
I don't think he gets out. I don't think he gets out of that basement.
But
why then show the shot of him not there burning? Come on, man.
Maybe he's on the ground.
No. You guys are smart enough to know.
I know.
That was a business decision.
And you know
decision.
This business
know.
Well enough to know that we were always going to get another Halloween at this. This opened to 80 million. You know this business too
but
well
you,
not to think we want to get
another. But having a
one.
Movie build up to that moment and the idea that this is somehow an end
for
Laurie.
You're too smart to think that we need closure.
It would be so much greater if they had the courage to end it.
Neither of you could have thought that we weren't going to get another Halloween movie.
No, I know.
You know better than that.
Jamie Lee Curtis
is returning to the role. You thought this was
going to
be the last Halloween.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
She's returning.
Jamie Lee Curtis
it's a big deal.
What do you mean bringing her back? She's done it like 1,000 times.
She's only done it 4 times.
That's a lot.
This is her 5th.
But the other ones don't matter. That's the point.
But she's still did them.
But you need to forget those for a second.
Okay, but we're
you
talking about
to.
Like, but you can't say she didn't do them because from the timeline.
But you have
them,
to forget
she still
them
did
in
them.
The story.
It's not like she, for 40 years she stepped away from this role and now she's coming
but
back.
Now,
this is the 5th time she's
but
done
your
it.
Mind is stepping out of the story and going into the business
no,
and going,
but,
she's
but
done
you're,
this
but
four
you're
time.
Going, but you're saying because she hasn't appeared in 40 years, therefore we need this. But she has.
But
so
then
she'll be in another one?
Of course she will.
I think she will.
No. That's the entire point
she,
of the ending.
She... And I'm not knocking Jamie Lee Curtis because I think she's embraced this very well. She's loving this.
What do you think the last shot means? The knife.
I think the last shot.
I think
it's
the passing of the torch.
Passing of the
I agree.
Torch.
So does that mean she doesn't
Greer's
come back?
Character and the
granddaughter. No, the granddaughter
character.
Takes the knife.
I think. Yeah, the granddaughter takes the knife.
Yeah,
I think. I think Jamie Lee Curtis still comes back. I think maybe she does so in a limited role.
Hmm.
I think. I think unfortunately now we get into. I think this is the best Halloween sequel ever.
Right.
I
agree.
It's not
saying and now
much.
I think the
but
next
agree,
sequel
yeah.
we revert back to the generic babysitter killer.
Ugh.
I think that's where we
I just
back.
Have a big problem with an hour and 49 minute film whose entire purpose is building up Laurie Strode on this emotional journey of 40 years of pain.
Right.
With three generations of Strodes. How great would it have been to see all three of them over Michael Myers' body?
Right.
Destroying him.
No, it'd be great.
Think about Jake, think about that moment for a
no.
moment. Think about the satisfaction.
Here's what
of
I'll
that
tell
moment.
You. Here's what I'll tell you.
And I'm not,
as a horror movie fan,
we're moving on.
Want to see the series. Like, I like the he's still alive bit.
But then you can bring him back in other reincarnations of other storylines.
But that's not
why call your movie Halloween?
Why not call? I mean.
Why not call it Halloween Revisit? Whatever, I don't care what the name would be.
For the record, it shouldn't have been called Halloween just because the first movie was called
you're
Halloween.
You're bookending it.
Right.
That title implied to me that this was the end.
Yeah, that I agree with that.
That title implied to me that we are coming full circle, done, killed, over.
It implied to me that audiences know what Halloween means and they'll come and see it as long as it doesn't have a stupid subtitle to it.
This goes back to my entire argument, and while you
know this business too
I know well. That, but answer me an honest question.
Yes.
We are in a business, yes, that is made to make money. But filmmakers still make movies.
Agreed.
In their own voice.
Agreed.
And do what they want to do with them. Not every filmmaker.
Character movies,
not every filmmaker has that ability. But some of them do. Bradley Cooper had the ability to do whatever he wanted to do with Star Is Born.
Right.
And he did whatever he wanted to do with it.
You make a Freddy or a Jason or a Michael movie, you leave him alive at the end of the movie.
Don't call it Halloween.
Sign.
Don't call it
exactly
Halloween.
Exactly what you call it.
Call it Halloween 40. Call
it
H4O.
Sign your soul to the devil and you leave them alive.
No, call it H4O.
Sean, back me up. You don't kill these people. No one has the right to kill these people. They belong to us as an audience.
Answer me a yes or no question. I just want a yes or no. Don't give me off whatever. Was the ending of this movie a business decision or a storytelling decision? Yes or no?
Yes or no?
That's literally not a yes or no question.
Right. I will rephrase it.
Yes or no? Pigs or dogs?
Right. You literally could not have picked a worse question.
I will rephrase it.
You built up such a dramatic moment.
Yeah.
I was hanging on every word.
Was the ending?
That question was literally the ending of Halloween, where you built it up and it was just,
exactly.
You could not deliver.
Was the ending a business decision?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's my problem.
Yeah.
So,
I agree.
Overall.
But, okay.
That's my problem.
No, but
that's
you're not allowed to make money. I don't think there's anything wrong with a business decision when it allows me to keep having fun Michael Myers movies. No one has a right, not one person has a right to kill off Michael Myers or Freddy or Jason.
Let me tell you this. That movie does not know it's a movie. That movie does not know that there's a business of Hollywood. Those characters don't know that they are in the business of show business. They are in a story that is being told. Hold on, listen. That's what I'm saying. They're in a story that's being told.
Right.
They're not aware that business exists. What you just said was, yes, it's a business decision.
But he survived the first movie. He got up after being shot multiple times and falling off a balcony.
And that's
fine. And got in the front yard and walked away.
Because we never saw him fully die.
He was shot.
My point being,
if that happened to you and you fell off a balcony, you get up and walk.
You cut his head off and you throw it in a freaking grinder. And there's no way he can come back from that.
Okay.
That's what you do.
Okay. Speaking of getting your head cut off and thrown into a grinder, let's talk about First Man.
Oh, wait,
no!
Let's talk about First Man.
Because Gabe's not here.
I do have one more question for you, Sean. Where are you at on this?
I agree with you. I agree that the ending was unsatisfactory because it wimped out in a horror movie fashion and left the door open.
Jake, last question for you.
I would have preferred full closure.
Thank you.
Of an end to Laurie's story, 100%. Michael
fully
dead.
End it.
Yeah, I don't need any more Halloween movies after this. I understand that if this movie opened as big as it did, and it did, it opened huge. That Universal absolutely would want to make more of them, but I don't need any more after this. I'm done. I'm done with that franchise.
Jake,
I'm done.
Now that you've seen the end.
There's three people that are all going to go see the next one.
Maybe. I'll go see it, but I don't need any more.
But this one had that emotionality built
into
it.
I'm done. I was ready for
But at this rate, we'll get the next emotional one when they do Halloween 22.
It would even be cooler if they both died at the same time.
So, First Man tanked at the box office.
It did.
Let's really tear the Band-Aid off of this one.
Mm.
Because second...
Can I say one more thing?
Why not?
I actually like the new Halloween movie.
Oh, I do too.
So
very much so.
To give some clarity here.
You don't like it? The new Halloween movie?
I loved it. What are you talking about?
You loved it. You liked it.
The more I think about it, the more I like it.
Okay.
I loved
it. It's great.
I liked the new Halloween. I give it a 3.5 out of 5.
Yeah.
I give it a 4 out of 5.
I want to explain that this discussion is solely based on the ending of the film.
Yeah, totally.
But everything prior to that, I really enjoyed.
Let me ask you this.
So, just want to say that.
First Man.
Yes.
Second week box office. $8 million. $29.9 million after 2 weeks.
What was the drop off?
I don't know the percentage.
Well, it's 16.7.
So 50% drop off.
Is its Oscar chances
done? Done.
done.
Doesn't get best picture, doesn't get actor, doesn't get director.
Disagree. Money doesn't play into the Oscars.
Are you kidding me? Have you ever seen the Oscars?
Look at the best picture winners over the past couple
years. No, there's there's a difference between...
How much
there's a difference between expectations.
Come on.
Expectations. There's a difference between a movie that wasn't expected to make money and a movie that was. First Man was expected to make money, and
yes,
it didn't.
It didn't.
No one expected
it didn't
the
actually cost that much.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. It came out as a bomb.
Let me ask you a question.
No, tell me about The Artist was never expected to make money. Three Billboards was never expected to make money.
The Artist made money.
But okay, but it was never expected to make like buku's bucks.
Moonlight
right?
won Best Picture. $27 million
Was never
domestic.
Expected to make money. First Man was expected to open with what Moonlight made.
I don't think the money
factors
into
the box. No, you are wrong.
Dude,
you are absolutely
most
wrong.
Movies that win
are
Best Picture don't make a lot of money.
No, but they're not expected to.
This is my
the
favorite
movies that win
episode.
Best Picture.
So
no, the movies that win, like the movies that you're talking about, Moonlight.
Yes.
No
King
one expected.
Speech.
No one
Artist.
Expected those movies
Hurt
to make
Locker.
Money. People expected. First Man to open between $20 to $30 million.
It made $20 million opening essentially.
No,
it
made
not 17,
it made 16.
17
it made,
million.
It made 16.
Yeah. Right.
No, it is considered a box office.
We all know what it was hurt by.
No, it was not hurt
we
by
all,
that. No.
Yes, it
no,
was.
It was not. It was not
that
hurt by that.
That is the reason why
it
didn't
no,
it
was
do
not.
Well.
Are you kidding me?
Have you seen people
no, it didn't
this
do
film?
Well because no one was interested in it.
I disagree
100%. Do you know how many people I talked to about that movie and like, oh yeah, it's the one with Neil Armstrong.
How
no
many
one I talked
are you getting
to.
About
no general public.
Wait, wait,
doesn't
let him say
no.
what his reasoning. What do you think the reason is the flag controversy?
Yes.
No. Yes, 100%?
100%.
You think that's the reason why people didn't go?
Yes.
Okay. I think that that is a portion of it. But I also agree
you,
with
Jake.
Jake's perspective of the story of Neil Armstrong was not interesting to people. And they're not. And the mainstream audience is not dialing into the new Damien Chazelle the way the three of us.
And here's the problem. That's the problem. We confuse what we're interested in with what the mainstream audience, the people out there that don't listen to podcasts like this, are interested in. My mom and dad, who go see a couple of movies a year, could not care less about the Neil Armstrong movie. They want to go see A Star Is Born because they're interested in that. Mm. They don't care
And also, Ryan Gosling is not that
he's not,
draw.
No, he's not.
He's
never
not
been a box office draw.
No, not like Bradley Cooper. Not like Gaga.
You,
obviously.
Just like me, have been getting the same tweets for
yes,
the past month.
Yes, but.
Hold on. Let me give my point on this. I have gotten over 100 tweets, at least, that I know of.
Oh, a lot. I've seen
them. And people physically telling me in person, I'm not seeing that film because it's anti-American.
Oh,
and
so
they were,
crazy.
And they
it's
removed
crazy.
The flag.
So angry.
The American flag. So my point being is that people were actively boycotting this movie.
No.
Yes, they
no,
were,
no,
man.
No, we're never going to see it
anyway.
Go
okay.
I promise you, they subscribed to this
wait,
ideal
wait. But like 50% of those people might have gone. Like, I think 50% of the people, you're saying that they dismissed it outright?
Yes.
I think 50% of those people might have gone if the word of mouth
no,
was like...
No, you said 50%. That is... I think that's
50%
optimistic.
of the protesters, you don't think 50%
no,
of them might
no.
have been like, I might go
because,
check it out.
Because anyone that allows themselves to be swayed, but persuaded by a...
Swayed.
A fact about a movie that they haven't seen yet
sure.
are not people that are open to go see a movie like First Man.
Right. Wait, well, okay, let me ask Kevin a question. I want to ask Kevin a question. Do you believe its Oscar chances are still pretty strong?
Yes.
You think it gets Best Picture?
Nomination. No, I think
nomination. Nomination. I'm just talking about nomination.
Yes, I think it's Best Picture nomination.
Picture, do you think director?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you think Gosling?
No.
Okay.
Oh, you think he's director?
Yes.
I argue with their director. Picture, I only say maybe a possibility because, like, these days, I mean, like, if they open it up to 10 or even 9,
right.
you can get a Best Picture nomination and then not get anything else above the line. You can get Best Picture nomination, and the next best nomination you get is like sound editing.
Yeah, sure, right. Now Kevin loves it. Kevin still loves the film. He wholeheartedly,
top three of the year. So it's so for you too.
No, yeah, I agree. I love the movie. It's going to be on my top 10 list in the year. I'm not knocking the quality of the film.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Do you think it's better than Star Is Born?
No.
Okay.
No.
My top three right now, which I've come to a conclusion at the moment, is Ready Player One, number one.
Right.
Star Is Born, two. First Man, three.
Interesting. Oh, last week he had a tie.
Yeah,
he's
but to Kevin's credit, he said by the end of the year he would have it ironed out. He's already had it more ironed out this week than he had.
I'm
last
working
week.
Through some issues right now. So I'm working through things. I'm trying to come to more conclusions.
Are you surprised by this box office?
No.
No, really?
No. You guys don't remember?
Yeah.
I don't think. Is someone knocking on our door? Is that Chase?
Come knock on our door.
We've been waiting on you.
Do you guys remember? Do you guys remember? And I wish we had audio of this. We may or may not have audio of this. About a month ago, I literally said to you guys that this is going to affect the box office for the film.
And it's not. It did not affect the box office.
But you didn't think this movie was going to open this badly.
I didn't, but I don't think that. I think it was because of general disinterest from the public. It didn't know. It opened poorly because people weren't interested in the movie. The general public that I talked to on the streets could not have cared less about this movie.
It doesn't have a huge draw.
No.
It doesn't.
There was no buzz. People don't care about the next Damien Chazelle movie like we do.
No.
The average audience does not know who Damien Chazelle is. And I hate saying
the
that.
The word of mouth,
true.
Which was, you have to see the moon landing on the biggest screen possible, didn't drive people
well,
to
also because it was only like the last 5 minutes of the movie.
Sure.
It's not like a Nolan movie where like you've got, if you don't see it in IMAX, you miss the entire experience.
Right.
This is sort of like, well, you miss the last 5 minutes if you don't see it, but like...
It's also a possibility that people just stayed home and watched Face Off on Netflix. You know, that's definitely something that probably...
That's a great movie.
Or Chase Off.
What are the movies for the next 2 months that you guys are most looking forward to?
Green Book.
As we close out. Really? Both of you guys said Green Book. At the exact same
and
time.
And Roma.
That's amazing.
Roma is so good.
Roma is a film. Amazing.
It exists.
Oh, Jake.
I am blown away by Jake's opinion on Roma, but we'll get to that.
You can't be blown away. You haven't seen it yet. You don't get to be blown away
by it.
But your opinion, based on the majority of what I've heard, is different.
You're a grown man. You can make your own decisions.
But
I listen to the majority.
I respect Jake as one of my best friends in the world, right. And it worries me that he feels the way he does about it.
Dude, it's great.
We will.
It's so great.
But we'll get into it.
Kevin, you're going to love it. You're going to love it. Oh, it's so good.
What's interesting is like Jake and I both love First Man. You didn't,
right?
And then I find it so interesting how we differ sometimes,
right?
Roma does nothing for me.
And what I'm finding fascinating is how polarized we were on that Halloween thing. That was a very heated discussion. I'm very happy about that.
I wish we were recording that.
Yeah, me too. Can you imagine that was?
It sucks that this is rehearsal.
Yeah, you imagine that was a podcast. Like, we could discuss these things. Like, it'd be really cool.
Our last news story is the fact that there's a rumor now out that Avengers 4 might be 3 hours long.
Bring it.
Yeah, really? Okay, that was what I was going to say. Like, too long, too short, doesn't matter. You're in for whatever, doesn't matter. Also, I want to ask, do we think that Avengers 4 is even going to get a trailer?
Yeah, it has to.
You think so?
Yeah, I don't think we live in a world where a movie that big doesn't get trailed.
Okay, so they have to put out something. Because, I mean, the minute that you release any kind of footage from this movie, it's going to be scrutinized more than the Zapruder film. Because we have characters who are dead, and if they're shown, we have to wonder how they came back. Were you able to open that, Chase? Did you get it? Also, if the characters that are alive, we don't necessarily know like what they're going to be doing. My biggest question for Avengers 4 is whether there's a huge time jump. I need to know if it's like 5 years ahead.
I think the trailer is going to be almost Star Wars-like, where it doesn't actually tell us anything.
Okay.
And there are going to be scenes that are cut out of context.
Right.
There are going to be scenes that are squished together, and we're going to think that they mean something, but they don't, because one's going to come from the first half of the film, and the second one's going to come from the second half of the film.
Okay.
We're going to get nothing from the trailer other than here are scenes that exist within this film.
Okay.
And the movie is officially wrapped, right? As we speak, production wise.
Yeah, yeah. The Russos posted a tweet.
What was that tweet? It was just like a weird.
It looked like a light.
I didn't understand what that was. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I have no idea. And still no title. Still no trailer. How does a 3 hour?
I think they're going
to
call
Avengers
it
4
Avengers
sound to you.
Avengers Forrest Gump. That's what they're calling
Christ.
It. Avengers 4 has come.
4
It's very late. It is now Monday morning in London.
I would respect that if that title actually happened.
Would you? Would you? Sometimes I feel like you just say things in this podcast actually mean them.
But to give perspective for people who may be turning in, Sean.
Also, if this is the first episode you've listened to, episode 40, whatever.
42.
You've missed out on a lot of inside jokes.
Sean hates.
You start back at the beginning when we were wondering if Shape of Water was going to win Best Picture. Just go back to the start.
Sean hates Forrest Gump so much that when I knocked on his door tonight to come into here to do our podcast, I pulled a scene of Forrest Gump up and stepped aside from the door. And as he opened the door, he was greeted to a scene of Forrest and
in
Bubba.
Vietnam.
Yeah, yeah. It was a great moment. So thank you.
You're crying.
You're welcome.
It's very passionate to me. We can talk about Bohemian Rhapsody. We've all been able to see it. I don't think we can get into it. It's not like spoilers. I know spoilers with Bohemian Rhapsody. Can we discuss Bohemian Rhapsody? Are we able to talk about it at all?
I don't know. I don't know.
Well, why don't we discuss what we were doing?
Let's talk about the junket.
Yeah.
Let's get into the junket.
Because I don't know. Well, the movie opens in a couple weeks. The review embargo, I don't know if it's up yet.
Right. So we're in
London. I'm a little hesitant to get into details.
I have socially reacted to it on my Twitter.
Okay.
I've reacted to it in my heart.
Yeah, I know.
And if you know my heart, then you know what I think.
That's all that matters.
But I think we all can agree. We'll skate on this in regards to keeping it socially. In regards to, we'll react to it like as we would socially, but we will hold our official reviews.
And we'll get in depth once it's open and more people can actually understand it.
Exactly.
So, how'd your interviews go?
I mean, they were awesome. So Jake, Sean, and I are in London. We interviewed the cast today. Rami Malek, the entire cast, Lucy Boynton, who I'm obsessed with from Sing Street.
I talked to her about Sing Street.
So did I. I love that movie.
It's so great.
Some of my favorite movies ever.
Yeah.
I did do my Graham King joke when I sat down.
No, did you really?
Yes, okay, I did.
Oh my God, please set this up. This is a great joke.
So I
can't believe you did this.
Well, it made sense. So like when I sat down, so we were in the hallway. And I said, I would love to walk in Graham King's room and say, now that you've made this, why don't you legally change your name to Graham Queen? Because it's a movie about queens. So I told Jake and John.
Can we say for a second, we
do this all the time.
Oftentimes throughout this podcast, we've talked about my buddy Chase, who is a fan of the podcast.
Chase Off.
He is an advocate for Bathroom Blend. He's an advocate listener. And he's actually literally in the room with us right now. Chase, hello.
He is in the room.
Hi, everyone.
In the room where it happens.
In the room where it happens. We're going to be sued by Lin-Manuel Miranda.
So how did it go? Did it work?
So, no, it ended up being perfect. So I walked into Graham King's room. By the way, who's produced every film you could ever imagine, from like The Departed to, a lot of Scorsese films.
The Departed?
The Departed.
Are you a co-op?
So
are you a co-op?
I just sat down and I said, hey, this has been a 10-year journey for you. And he's like, yeah. I was like, you technically could change your name to Graham Queen. And he started like laughing really heavily. But it was just done in such a nonchalant way. His last name is King. The movie's about Queen. It made perfect sense.
I'm sorry, could you explain that joke?
Yeah, yeah. So basically, because King and Queen.
I love that joke. It's the best.
But yeah, so the interviews were great. We interviewed the whole cast. Last time we saw the film here in London. And tonight we went to this cool lighting of the Carnaby Street, which we mentioned earlier.
Yep, you can find it on our social channels.
Yeah, and but the room that we all were worried about focusing on was the four room. So yes. Rami Malek was paired with three members of the Queen band. Mm-hmm. So Willem Lee, Ben Hardy.
Yes.
And then Joe Mazzello.
Yes, who's
the kid from Jurassic Park.
Right. And I also The Cure.
Yeah, have I told the story about pulling him aside and asking how they shot the fence scene in Jurassic Park?
No.
On our podcast?
No, tell that one.
So we were in Vegas, and we were walking into this room to interview the four members of the group, but Lucy Boynton was actually doing the interviews for Ben Hardy, because Ben Hardy was, I think, shooting a Michael Bay movie for Netflix. So Joe walks out of the room. I said, I walk up to Joe and I'm like, hey, can I ask you a quick question? Like, I'm not going to be able to get to this in the room because it's four people in a room. So Joe and I just had a great discussion about the fence scene in Jurassic Park. The ejection from the fence was actually a stunt double.
No!
So they came in close on Joseph's face on a fake fence, and then they cut to a shot of a stunt double being ejected from the fence, and they pick him back up. And he talked about meeting Stan Winston. He talked about working on that and the car sequence with the animatronic T-Rex that was out being operated. It was a very cool discussion. But so if you're wondering who Joe Mazzello is, he is the young boy from Jurassic Park.
It made me laugh today that Jake and I left the junket and we were trying to run some errands. Actually, we were picking up a microphone to be able to record this podcast today. And the three guys not named Rami Malek, who are playing the members of Queen, we're able to be out on the street smoking cigarettes and hanging out and just talking amongst the three of us. And Jake and I walked out and we were like, oh, guys, thank you so much for the interviews and appreciate all you're doing. And like, they're of the level of fame where they can still hang out on the street, which is great. You almost want to be at that level because Rami was clearly not with them, and A for
or maybe
Mr.
he just
Robot.
Doesn't smoke.
That's also probably true. A for Mr. Robot, but then also just because he's about to play Freddie Mercury, I think it's so much more on this level of superstardom. So it was fun to run into those guys. I think we had a really fun time. I think you find all of our interviews that we posted on our social media channels very, very soon. We want to talk about something we were able to do here in London, which blows our mind. And if you'll allow us just to sort of
geek out for a moment.
Yeah, just gush about this silly little podcast that we're doing. Last week, you know, when the three of us realized, like, in addition to coming here to do the junket and to be able to record together again, like, you know, we did in Toronto and we did it once in Paris where Van Vliet filled in for Kevin, you know, to be able to record a longer than usual.
Yeah, he sat in my Chris Van seat.
Podcast.
Yeah,
yeah.
To do my segment.
We threw out this idea of what if we just went to a pub and met with anyone who potentially listened to this show And we ended up going to this place called the King's Head here in Mayfair, and we had five listeners who showed up. And now, I mean, five doesn't sound like amazing, but you know, as Jake sort of pointed out, like this is a podcast that hasn't even been in existence. He said when he phrased it this way, it blew me away. It was like the Real Blend podcast didn't even exist a year ago, and the fact that we were able to come to London and meet with five people who listened to the show blows our minds. So we went to this fan meetup. The three of us wholly expected to just have the three of us in a bar.
Yeah. We literally said that.
We honestly decided, like, if worst case scenario is the three of us hang out in a bar and drink,
yeah,
then we're doing okay.
So that's a win.
But
exactly.
There was, I believe it was Toby was waiting outside for us.
Yes, as we were walking up to the
Toby
bar.
Was waiting Wire? Outside the door.
Yes.
Toby McGuire.
Toby Kebbell.
And then a few other amazing people showed up.
It was awesome.
I have a confession.
Please.
I'm just sorry I didn't tell you guys this sooner. I all five of those people were my mom. But it was done like Nutty Professor style, where she sat there.
Wait, we were looking at tennis balls?
You remember Nutty Professor with the dinner table scene with the Hercules scene.
Way too impressed with this show.
The Hercules scene. Eddie Murphy played five people in that scene.
Right.
That's what was happening.
So Saskia,
so
who
Jill,
came
every one of them was my mom.
Didn't exist?
No.
Didn't
so like,
exist.
When
Toby
you were looking at
exist.
Toby,
right.
There were tennis balls
Amon,
where the other people
who came
were.
To visit us.
Right. And then we somehow cut
did
to
not exist.
Other conversations where my
right.
mom then got into costume.
Carrie Ellen,
yeah.
Who
Jill,
was
your talent knows no bounds.
You know what was interesting? When I texted my mom after the whole thing was over,
right.
She said it reminded her of what it felt like to be Robin Williams in those scenes in Mrs. Doubtfire,
right.
When he's going to the bathroom back at the end, when he's switching from table to table,
right.
So I don't know if you noticed at one point. I think Toby may have had like a wig on
right.
by accident
right.
Because he was supposed to be right. somebody else. So mom, thank
that
you.
That is one of the funniest scenes where Robin Williams returns to the table and he's kind of half
the
in
lipstick.
Drag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it, like,
sort of flirt
it's
with a
so
guy
great.
Sitting across from him.
That scene made me so stressed out. It's like, yeah.
Okay, can we get back to the comedy people
all
that came out to
reality,
her?
In reality, yes, outside of Kevin's far-fetched joke.
And that comes from me joking that my mom writes every review we get, which is not true, clearly, but it's very funny. Just
we cannot emphasize enough how much we appreciate the
yeah.
people who came out.
It's very humbling.
To hang out with us. And we really, you guys are outstanding. We love the fact that you guys listened to us. We love the fact that you guys took the time to actually come out of your normal schedules in the middle of a Brexit a gigantic
yeah.
Brexit rally.
Which we all got stuck in.
And we loved meeting you guys. We loved hanging out with you guys. It has really energized the three of us to potentially do something else. I know we're talking about doing something in Chicago at Celebration. That's not until April, so maybe we can do something before that. I don't know.
I'd like to think that there'll be a junk that'll bring us all together
right.
before then.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. But we thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank
Thanks
you.
Thanks
so
to my
much.
Mom for flying to London
for
to do that.
For coming.
Really nice.
Speaking of London.
No, but being honest, though, the five people who showed up, we were walking to the bar, And I literally said to Sean and Jake, I'm like, guys, what if no one shows up to this? This is gonna be kind of weird, right? No, like Jake said, we'll just grab a drink together and just be friends and chill. And like,
I didn't say be friends.
Not be friends, but he said, well, I'll appear to be your friend kind of thing. Yeah.
I didn't even say those.
Yeah, you didn't? Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm hearing things. I'm going through some things, sorry. So thank you to the 5 listeners. It was awesome. I'm actually going to take a note from about the Mission Impossible element.
Carrie.
Yeah, so Carrie does something similar to my wife and I do, which she goes to different areas and refilms locations of famous movie shoots. And my wife and I have been doing that since we first started dating when Harry Met Sally, Cats and Stallion, New York, whatever. But Carrie went to a location where she did the running shot from Mission Impossible Fallout, which is about 20 minutes away from our hotel.
Looks great.
So tomorrow I'm going to go out there because of Carrie, who sent me the location. She actually sent me a really nice tweet with a map of London pointing to where this location is.
That's awesome.
That's how dedicated our listeners are. So shout out to everybody who came out and for our great discussions about movies. Yep. I don't remember if we came to a conclusion on everybody's Kill Bill theory, but
it was pretty split.
Yeah,
which I'm really happy about.
Yeah, yeah,
it was pretty split. And what I love the most is when Toby was ready to take his picture, he said,
"Oh, Jill, what's
should it? I hold my cufflink like Jake does?" And it's very funny to see someone else kind of pulled Jake's move. And
but though it's not my move, it's The Rock's move. The Rock taught us.
That's how The Rock holds
it. It comes from not knowing what to do with your hands in a picture, so you hold your cufflinks.
Well, that's your move now. You claimed it.
You know what? If The Rock walks in this room, I'm gonna tell him. Sean says that's my move.
Since we are in London right now, one bit that we wanted to do, one segment that we wanted to do, was our favorite London press experiences. And I don't know if Kevin, if I told you about this. Maybe I didn't tell Kevin that we were doing this. So I'm going to let, and Jake actually sort of, and then we're getting to this week's blend game, which is underrated horror blend. But before we get to that, because the three of us are together in London, I want to sort of take the time to sort of talk about favorite London press experiences. And given Kevin some time to sort of think about it, because I think I'm just hitting him with this now, I want Jake to go first because Jake sort of intrigued me earlier today with his answer of saying, he's like, do I have to do favorite or is it best or is it just like most memorable? And then he sort of took it from there with I thought it was an intriguing tease. So Jake, take it from there.
Yeah, the very first time I ever came to London, it had to be my early 20s at this point. And it was for a pretty big junket that I was really excited about, and a lot of people seemed to be pretty excited about it. So we showed up. I showed up to London, and actually my parents came with me, and it was all of our first time in London together. Oh, wow. It was a pretty big deal. And,
nice.
And I remember going to the screening and just being just psyched out of my mind. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm here for this movie. And we go to it's the world premiere, and we're talking about a movie that the world was looking forward to. And we show up at the premiere. And I get my seat, and really, like, I didn't really have, you guys weren't there, I didn't have a ton of friends there, so I'm sitting there by myself, and I'm watching this movie, and I'm watching this movie, and I'm watching this movie, and the movie ends, and the theater erupts in a roar of applause, and people just going nuts, their eyeballs were melting, their faces were just melting off like it's Raiders of the Lost Ark, and they're like, my God, this is like the second coming of Christ, and I remember thinking, like, I didn't like that movie very much. And like, what did you all see that I didn't see? And I don't think that's a very good movie. And it was a little film called Avatar.
Oh, no. And
I remember thinking, like, what did everyone else see that I didn't see?
What? You came in for Avatar?
Yeah, and I remember, like, even, like, going to it was a Fox film. I remember going to Fox the next day, and people were like, you know, because you need to give a reaction to the studios. They want to know what you think about it.
Sure.
And everyone was just like making a beeline to be able to go to the studios and be like, movie is amazing, yeah. Top 10 list, best film of the year. Like, we're talking Oscars, best picture. And they got to me, they're like, Jake, this is your kind of movie, what'd you think? And I was like, yeah, it was alright. Yeah. It's got like Pocahontas. And a hush.
And Ferngully.
And because the person checking in press was the producer of the film, John
Landau.
John Landau was checking in press in the hospitality suite. And so he was part of the, like, what did you think? And I didn't know it was him.
Okay.
Ooh.
And was sort of like, Yeah, you know, it was okay, but I felt like it was a little derivative and like, you know.
No!
And someone pulled me aside and was like, that's the producer of the film. And I was like, I wish you had told me that before you
checked. He's a big camera guy, yeah. too. He's a huge camera guy.
And so that is not necessarily my favorite. I've been to London at this. I was trying to count up how many times I've been to London. Probably in the ballpark of 20-ish times I've been to London.
Jake, would you say that when someone pulled you aside, they pulled your John hand down aside? Did they take your hand out aside?
No.
Do you get it? Because his last name is Landau. And somebody pulled your hand down to side.
Did you get camera for that movie?
Yeah, we got camera.
Did you really? What did derail the entire podcast? Oh, God, that hurt. That hurt so much. All right, I'm going to go next.
Wait.
Do you have your answer? Get your answer.
By the way, it's funny that Jake said that, because I was
Do you want to go next?
Or no, you go next. But what, sure? I want to express Jake's sentiment, because Terminator 2...
Please express my sentiment.
Oh, God, where's Gabe to wrap us up?
Anyways, Terminator. Chase
is wrapping us up.
God, he looked like Gabe too for a second. He had glasses on, that mean face.
Terminator 2.
So, James Cameron is the reason why I do what I do today.
Yeah.
Terminator 2 changed my life. I've said this story a million times. I was 8 years old. Terminator 2 is the reason why I love films. It's the reason why I ask the questions that I ask. That movie blew my mind. Yeah. I remember sitting there with my parents going, how are they doing this? And I remember interviewing James Cameron for Avatar. And I said to him, 5 minutes into the discussion, can I ask you a question? How did you get the T-1000 to rise out of the ground and then turn into that cop and put his knife in his eye? And I think he was just like, well, none of that was actually there. And I wasn't asking it like that, but it was really funny. By the way, cool little movie trivia. Those two cops are twin brothers.
Oh.
You didn't know that?
I didn't know that.
Did you know that the movie scene in T2 when they're peeling back Arnold's head in front of a mirror is because Linda Hamilton has a twin, and they're
yes,
that's on a mirror.
That's two. She, yeah, exactly. I think that's her when T-1000 turns into her. Yeah. So anyway, so when Avatar was starting to come out, and the trailers would say from the director of Terminator 2 or True Lies or Titanic, which are all phenomenal films, when Avatar ended, I had the exact reaction you did. Everyone else in the theater, blown away, masterpiece.
Like, I'm not crazy.
And I walked out and I went,
it was fine.
It was extremely underwhelming. Honestly, I was extremely disappointed as a James Cameron fan because the guy, like, consider it. And what I ended up figuring out over the years with Avatar was that he essentially put technology over script.
Yeah.
And he waited for his technology to catch up and not really cared, in my opinion, based on what I saw on screen, about the script and the story.
Right.
And when you have an object in your film that is hard to get, and it's called unobtainium, a bit of a problem for me. Think about how ridiculous that sounds. The thing they're looking for that they can't get is called unobtainium. It was very disappointing. I agree with you. Yes. I don't think Avatar's a bad movie. It's just extremely underwhelming. But continue your... What's your favorite London
My
story?
Turn. Okay, so... before we came over here to London for this trip, I was having a conversation with my mom who lives near me in Charlotte, and she's adorable.
What's her name?
Maureen.
Okay. Maureen!
Maureen O'Connell. She's adorable. She loves when I get to go on trips like this. She thinks international travel is like the greatest thing. And she said, well, how many times is this to London for you? Is it like 5 or 6? And I said, I mean, truthfully, it's like 15. Like, I mean, it really got away from me because I remember the first time coming over here was just like so blown away by the fact that you can actually come to another country to watch movies or talk about movies. Like that's like so foreign to me. And so the idea that I've been able to come over as many times as I was. So literally sitting at the gate ready to board, I pulled out a piece of paper and just scratched out like the times that I remember coming to London because I never really kept track. And I actually came up with 15 that I remembered, and I know that I'm even forgetting a few, and that to me is an incredible, incredible blessing to be able to come over here. And like I was saying to Jake today, like if you just looked at that list of 15 and you said, like, this is your career. Like, these are the things you've been able to do.
Dude, one of these.
Over the course of your career. Like, it would blow your mind. It would blow your mind.
Even the one we're on right now would blow my mind.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so, like, I understand 100% that, like, this is such an incredible gift, and this is not normal. And we said this to each other when we're sitting at the Carnaby Street celebration tonight. As Brian May is coming up on stage to, like, press the button to turn on the lights, we were like, this is not normal. We should never think this is normal. It's on us to basically remember how unusual this is that we get to do this.
And you got to go back home and be able to adjust back to what real life really is.
100%.
You have to. Yeah. Yeah. So, it's so hard sometimes because of the how cool these things are. But
there's two that I want to bring up. One is a set visit to Zack Snyder's Justice League, which was, to me, fascinating in this moment, in that when we go to set visits, everything that we learned is 100% embargoed. We can't talk about it. We have to sit on this information that we learn. We see amazing things on the sets of these movies. And being able to walk around like a studio like Pinewood and to
where
see
they shoot Star Wars and the Bond movies.
Oh, my God. To see a blockbuster being shot is like, to me, the kid in me is like, why are you here? Yeah. You know, how are you on this set? And actually, one time when we were here in London on the Thor the Dark World stage, and we were in a soundstage where they said, this was Asgard. This was the throne room of Asgard. And they said, in this room that you guys are standing in right now is where they shot the finale to Star Wars, where they all get their medals.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Right? I just got chills.
And I was like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, how are we in this room? Like, but this was the soundstage. But that's not even my thing. My thing is like a Harry Potter trip. Because prior to the MCU, my argument is that the Harry Potter franchise is the most impressive film franchise that I've ever seen from start to finish. Because you cast these kids and this incredible supporting cast, and you carried them through for eight movies. Is it eight movies?
Yeah, eight movies.
And none of them screwed up, right? Like, like theoretically, over the course of these eight movies, someone should have got in some sort of trouble.
Right.
Yeah.
Where Rupert Grint went on a drug bend and he just could never finish his movie. Or someone died. And God bless Alan Rickman made it through the entire thing. Yeah. Thank God. And Daniel Radcliffe, who they invested in when he was a freaking 7-year-old, grew up to become Harry Potter.
And
right?
Even like the biggest scandal was that, like, he came out and admitted he had a drinking problem, but he handled it in the most mature adult, like, coming out saying, hey, I have this issue and this is something I want to get control of. Like, even the quote unquote scandals were handled it with the most class and in the most, like, professional adult way. In the sense that, like, I haven't really necessarily followed that story, but hopefully he's gotten under control.
I think he's
got it
fine.
Handled. And
yeah. So that franchise to me has blown me away. So I've always viewed the Harry Potter franchise as, like, it shouldn't happen. Like, there's just no way that they should have pulled it off from start to finish. It shouldn't be as good as it was. But we were able to go to the set of Fantastic Beasts, and we watched them recreate a Parisian neighborhood. So if you go to a set and you step onto it, and it's a set from another city that you're in London, but you're standing on a set and it's Paris, and half of it, they divided it in half, and one half was a normal Parisian street and the other half was the magic version of the Parisian street. So every storefront was a magician's storefront or some sort of magic tinged storefront, and the centerpiece was this. You're going to see this in Crimes of Grindelwald. This was for the set of Crimes of Grindelwald. So we went to this amazing set, and it was so elaborate. It was like numerous blocks long. We're through different alleyways. We're walking through this entire set. We're loving every minute of it. But then at the end of the night, they let us go to the Harry Potter museum or exhibit that's outside of Pinewood, and they shut it down just for us to be able to go through. So, and if no one's ever been, like, if you're a Harry Potter fan, even like of the littlest bit, like you have to go to this exhibit because it's just the most incredible collection of props and sets from this franchise.
Dining hall.
It's everything. Like the minute you walk in,
Edge of Tomorrow.
The first thing is the Great Hall.
Sick.
With the floating candles and the tables that they all sat at.
Crazy.
But it was one of those things where, like, every single time we went through another room, and so we go through, and the first exhibit is like statements from the different directors. And to me, it's Cuarón. Like, you see Cuarón and Azkaban, and we've talked about this in the podcast. So I see him talking about his Azkaban thing. And each room you go to is like another, you just go deeper and deeper. And every time you think that it's done, of like, I've seen everything possible. There's no way I can see more. And then you walk through another exhibit. You saw the Hogwarts, the entire train of the Hogwarts Express. You go through replications of Harry's house. You go through replications of these Hogwarts rooms. It's like, it's so elaborate. It's so incredible. And the fact that we were able to like go watch them film Fantastic Beasts and then go through this entire exhibit of the entire Harry Potter universe. And it was like my job. Like, my job. Jake is yawning. But it's like, it blew me away.
You've also been up for a very long time.
It blew me away.
I'm not yawning by nature of the story. It's actually fascinating. And actually, that's actually a bucket list thing of mine. I've always wanted to go to that.
Incredible. Incredible. And so that, whenever I think of London, I will think of being able to go to the set of Fantastic Beasts and then to go through the entire Harry Potter.
Yours is so much more positive than mine.
Exhibit. I know. Well, I also hate Avatar. So
I do.
I'm with you.
I mean, I find it interesting that you went on that very passionate moment just now.
Yes,
about to happen.
The only thing that just happened was a yawn O'Connell.
No. That's very good. That's very good. Is you have a London memory?
Is Chase Crowley under the bed? Come on.
Do you have a good London memory?
Yawn, Sean.
You must have a good London memory.
I'm not yawning. That was a great story. We've just been up for a very long time.
It's very
you yawn O'Connell.
It's really I woke up at 5:30 and it is almost 1.
Admit that you yawn O'Connell.
Kevin, finish this up.
We haven't even gotten to our blend yet.
I know, our blend.
Mine is actually... I've been thinking about this since you brought it up just now. And
it's like for 4 minutes.
Well, prior to your yawn, there was about 10, 15 minutes of discussion.
I got very wordy.
No, I thought it was a great story. I love your passion for it. That's why we do our show.
Of course.
This is true.
Unfortunately, Jake doesn't appreciate that.
I quit.
Mr. White.
I quit. So I worked at a movie theater when I was 14. No, I was 14. Wait, 16.
Oh, dear God.
What? No, this is actually, there's no joke here. When I worked at a movie theater, it was around the time that the first Fast and Furious movie opened up. And
where are you going?
I was obsessed with that first movie. I saw it at least 9 times in theaters. I have all 9 tickets. What I would do is I would go... After work every night, I would go to see it again. Because it was like, I also grew up in an area where where car shows were a big deal. Like on Saturday night, you'd trick out your car a little bit and you would drive to like a Best Buy or a Circuit City parking lot or whatever. And you would, remember Circuit City? I don't know if you guys remember.
Yeah, it was the lesser brother of Best Buy.
Rest in peace, Circuit City. So you would go there and you would trick out your cars. My brother was really into it. I was, you know, I had 2 friends who were really, really into it. So I would just go with them to these car shows. You know, it was fun. It was like, but when Fast and Furious came out, it kind of spoke to that culture. But it was also like, just, I loved the dynamic of the characters. And I know it sounds weird like to talk about character depth in a Fast and Furious movie. But I genuinely do think that over the course of these films, I care about, you know, the characters and
the
Walker.
Family.
Yeah, I do. I actually do. One of the times I saw Fast and Furious was my buddy Brendan at the Egyptian Theater in Maryland. Mm. I don't remember how I was up there visiting him, but I remember the ticket. It was like a blue Fast and Furious ticket. And I don't know, I just kept all of them, but that was the one that I liked the most because it stood out from all my other tickets because it looked different. Because every ticket I had was like basically the normal ticket printing of my area. So Kiln Creek Regal Cinemas or AMC Patrick Henry. So I get an invite to London to do Fast and Furious 6, Fast 6. Mm. You were there.
I was there.
And so I you know, open up my ticket stub book and I'm like, oh, I got to bring my Fast and Furious ticket to the cast. I mean, they're all going to be there.
Yeah.
So we get there. We're doing Star Trek Into Darkness first. And then, so the cool, this story has a lot of interesting elements that make it the best, but we interviewed Abrams. This is right as Abrams got the Star Wars gig.
Mm.
He was fielding very non-spoiler questions about. I remember telling J.J. Abrams, please put a lens flare at the end of your sabers. And I remember him like dying laughing. I was, I'll see what I can do. I don't remember if he that's a whole other story.
Awesome.
But it was a cool thing because we got to interview, it was Pine and Quinto, it was Simon Pegg. It was a great jump.
Did Cumberbatch?
Cumberbatch was there. So then we get to Fast and Furious. So it was a weird thing for me because I had been doing junkets at the time. I've been doing them frequently, but I never got to talk to the Fast and Furious cast.
Right.
We're six films in. I mean, we all know that two and three kind of jumped the shark, even though I kind of like three a little bit. Guilty pleasure. But four, five, I loved. Five was
incredible.
Five was reinvigorated the franchise. So I was like freaking out to be able to even like meet Vin Diesel or Paul Walker or anybody who is in the cast. Michelle Rodriguez. No, Rock actually didn't show up. Jake has a funny story about that with the tweet.
He tweeted me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He couldn't make it in for some reason. So
he like tweeted me to like apologize that he couldn't be there.
Really?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Did you call him out?
And I didn't call him out. I think I just said something about being disappointed that like the Rock. Because I think he hurt himself shooting something and couldn't make the jump across the pond.
The Tooth Fairy?
How dare you say that? don't say what that's
game plan. See, I don't know why.
How dare you?
I don't know why they haven't made a sequel to that yet and called it Tooth Fairy with TWO. Like, think about that. Tooth Fairy. Like, the Rock needs to get on that. Dwayne,
thank you very much for tuning in to this. This is, how are we going to top that?
Anyways, so to bring the story to a close.
Tooth. Do you get it?
Tooth
Fairy.
Yeah.
Tooth.
Should you keep going?
So I'm in.
I'd like to lose more listeners, please.
I'm in London to interview the Fast and Furious cast, and I have my ticket with me.
Right.
And I go into each room.
Tooth.
Yeah, you get it? You get it? Chase, let me explain it.
Yes.
I go,
yes. Wait, where did they do the interviews? It was like on a rooftop.
It was on a
somewhere.
Rooftop.
Yeah. Wait, what was the rooftop when you got to go to the top of the O2 or something?
That was it.
That was for that?
Yeah. That was,
that was amazing.
That was the stand-up.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Okay.
So,
I appreciate you remember all my...
It was awesome.
Thanks, man.
Walking into those rooms and, you know, just having full-on, like, Fast and Furious conversations, which was very weird for me considering I saw the film 9 times. But to have been able to sit across from Paul Walker and
have him...
Did they
get your passion?
Oh, no. Paul Walker even said to me, like, you know, thank you for your questions. Thank you for taking the time to actually prepare for this.
He was paired with Jordana.
Jordana Brewster.
Yeah, right.
I remember at 7, I got to ask Jordana Brewster, because this is after Walker's passing, about that famous scene in the first one when the sandwich, when he gets the tuna sandwich and he can, like... You don't remember that whole sequence?
Maybe.
Oh, it's a great scene. Yeah, you go back and watch Fast and Furious 1. I've seen it enough times, I know every scene.
Is it a great scene?
Yes.
It's
it actually
memorable,
is.
Memorable scene.
He lives his life a quarter mile at a time. Come on. This is a very serious discussion.
I understand that those 20 seconds or less, he's free.
Yeah.
But is it a great scene?
I think Fast 5 is a great movie.
So that was a good
I like Fast 5.
But the reason why the junkie... sticks out to me now is I was able to show Paul Walker my ticket.
Right.
Paul Walker held my ticket. He appreciated that I still have my ticket.
Right.
And just to have been able to sit down with him and talk to him, and it happened to be in London, it'll always stick out to me.
That's awesome.
And it was, you know, when he passed away, it was what? Jake's laughing about something else. But when Paul Walker passed away, it was a very serious thing, and I was just very thankful I got to meet him.
Yeah.
And actually,
he was always a nice guy. That's
good
awesome.
Conversation with him, and it was just so now that whole full circle of working in a movie theater, having my tickets, bringing it to Paul Walker, having Vin Diesel hold it, having Paul Walker hold
awesome.
It.
That's
awesome.
That's a great story.
Very
that's
surreal.
Awesome. That's
a
great story.
Yeah.
This week's blend. We are still in the middle of October.
What are you laughing?
We are playing horror themed blends, and this week's blend, as reminded to us by Carrie, because we forgot when we were at the meetup. And she was like, it's underrated.
Because Kevin and I could not remember what our blend was.
Could not remember
this
at
week.
All. And I know that you guys both have the same one, so I will let Jake take it. Jake, tell us what your and Kevin's pick is.
Not just like favorite
underrated
horror movie,
blend.
Genuinely one of my favorite horror movies of all time. And in fact, it made my top 10 list of the year whenever it came out. It was a little film called The Descent.
Oh, I was really, really hoping you both would pick this.
It's if you've never seen it,
right?
It's genuinely just a brilliant film about a group of women who go spelunking together.
Right.
And this group of women have their own interesting history, and they go spelunking, and it's as they get deeper and deeper into the cave, something happens that prevents them from being able to turn back.
Okay.
And as they progress forward, there's something that lies ahead of them that they're not prepared for.
Okay.
And that's all I'm prepared to tell you about, because if you don't know what this movie is, if you're unfamiliar with it, it's best don't look up the trailer.
Right.
Don't YouTube it. I believe it's on Netflix. If it's not, go on Amazon Prime and pay $4 to rent it. Just do, and make sure that also that you
watch the original British version. There's an American cut that has a, what they call the American ending, which is the British version chopped off by 30 seconds, which makes no sense.
So that makes a huge difference? 30 seconds?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, and we'll talk about the ending off air, and I'll tell you why I think it makes a difference.
Okay.
But if you've never seen it before, it's just truly, it's terrifying. It brings in a lot of personal feeling. They're all these very strong female characters. They're all really well developed, and there's a lot of emotional stakes to it. Yeah. And then there's also, like, it's just genuinely a really freaking scary movie.
Do you know how people can watch it? Is it on streaming?
I think it was on Netflix for a while.
Right.
I watched it on Netflix, so my problem is because I watched it, it didn't pop up anymore. So I don't know if it's still there.
Okay. Kevin, what do you think of it?
The Descent?
Yeah.
Well, I actually wanted to go with something different because I didn't want to...
No, dude.
When this was first announced, the first movie that hit my mind was The Descent.
Sure.
I know Jake and I both have a very similar mindset on that film. So I'm going to defer that one to Jake because I want to be able to go a different route only because I think there are so many great underrated horror films.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if somebody asked me that question flat outright, I would say The Descent.
Yeah, that's right.
So I'm going to go with two because I'm cheating. And I'm also deferring to one to two that I'm not going with the one I truly feel. I'm going to go with... Because you said that Cabin in the Woods does not count for this discussion, right?
Correct. I think it's appreciated
enough. Which I don't understand
why. Well, I think it's appreciated enough that it's not underrated.
I think The Descent and Cabin in the Woods are in the same category.
Oh, I disagree. I think Cabin is much higher.
I don't think so. I think they're both very underrated.
Oh, really? All
yeah.
Right. Chase
so,
is,
I mean, Cabin in the Woods.
Is Chase here to stand by for all of our arguments?
Yeah.
Like the tiebreaker?
Yeah.
The Cabin in the Woods is
he's here.
The Cabin in the Woods is an absolute game changer. But
it's amazing.
But since that one last week was told to me that I can't go that route.
Right.
But I would argue.
When you listen, like you put
but I do,
on monster list. So
I do argue that I do argue that Cabin in the Woods is
Driving Miss Daisy.
Cabin in the Woods to me is an underrated horror movie. But
okay.
I'm gonna go with two. I'm gonna go with The Mist.
Oh, that's a good one.
Great call. Great call.
And the reason I go with The Mist is because it has arguably, in my opinion, one of the most shocking endings I've ever seen in a film.
Yes. Oof. Very strong.
Which I still don't fully feel like I've ever fully comprehended and understood.
I love it.
And what's ironic
is that Stephen King is known for his dark endings, and that is a novella that ends fairly hopeful. Have you read it?
Yes, I have.
It ends in a hopeful fashion.
Yes, and the movie does not.
And the movie, and he's known for dark endings, and that's one of his few stories that ends hopefully.
Right, but he loves the movie.
He ending. Loves, and he hasn't. He's. I mean, Frank Darabont, right? I mean, I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No,
but like,
okay. No, but Darabont, yeah. I'm like, the ending is so.
Yeah. No one knows King more than Darabont.
Right, it's true.
Yeah, because Darabont did what Green Mile and Shawshank.
And Shawshank, yeah.
Yeah.
But.
Except me, I met King one time. Did I ever talk about that story?
You did.
Yeah,
many times.
Once or twice.
Thanks,
for one of his best movies, right?
Oh yeah, Dark Tower. It was so awesome. That's my choice. For
yeah.
Actually, because it was a horror movie.
So I'm gonna go with The Mist. It'd be solely based on the ending,
mm-hmm.
and then Mike Doherty film called Trick or Treat, which is
oh nice, great,
phenomenal,
great choice,
phenomenal
oh,
film.
Yeah,
good movie,
really
great,
good
movie. And that little kid, the kid with the mat, like it's so
and the,
scary.
The bus going off the cliff
and a pack win. The whole that's a really violent.
So wait, what's your pick?
So those two, I think.
You picked three.
Actually, I picked four. I picked four, actually. Well,
I mean, why do we even do this?
Right.
I actually
would have
gone.
1000 is best monster. Driving Miss Daisy is best underrated horror movie.
I actually,
like, if we're not going to play by the rules, then what are we doing?
I would have gone with Cabin in the Woods if
yeah.
you had told me
I
could. I
think you should be able to go with Cabin in the Woods.
But
I think that falls under the category of
okay.
underrated horror movie.
Then if I'm allowed to go Cabin in the Woods, that will be my ultimate pick.
So five. He has five different movies he gets to choose from.
Yeah. But I wanted to name a couple other ones.
So Kevin doesn't have to play by the rules.
But I like this. No, I like it. I inspire his motivation.
I just didn't know we didn't have to play by the rules, but that's good to know moving forward.
What rules? There are no rules.
Picking one. One is
the
rule.
Game.
You pick one.
The blind game is wide
you
open.
You pick one.
All right, I'm picking Hush.
Ooh.
I've never
which
seen
is
Hush.
Perfect because of what I'm obsessed with right
oh,
now.
Oh, we have to mention this show on our
first. Give him Hush.
Let
give
Sean develop. We have to end this show because Jake and I are in the middle of one of the best shows
we've
ever seen.
And we're literally in the same spot. Episode 6
same
of the
spot.
Mother.
Yes. All right, go. Phantoms like a month.
Mike Flanagan is the...
I've never seen Hush. I need to.
Boss of horror.
Yes.
Right now.
And very excited to see what he does.
So to happy you brought this up.
Mike Flanagan is... He rules.
And he liked my tweet today.
He is the director of, on Netflix, The Haunting of Hill House, which is a 10-part series that the three of us are obsessed with. And these two guys are ahead of me. I'm into episode 4. They are both beyond me. But Mike Flanagan also directed a couple of the horror films, one of them being Hush, which you can find on Netflix right now, which is a story of a deaf woman who is at home.
Also mute.
And mute also, and is encountering a home invasion, and it's how she is able to react to this person.
Because she can neither hear the invasion nor get on the phone to
express. Well, just take it, Jake. Just take my pick.
Well, Jake, I mean, haven't got Jake. Five. I haven't got,
hey, Jake, can you hush?
I'm sorry. You got 18 different picks. So I'd like to at least invade Sean.
Did you miss the joke?
No, Hush, I got it. I think that Hush is a movie that people need to check out because they probably haven't seen it yet before. It came right around the time that Netflix was starting to really blossom with original programming. People didn't necessarily know that, like, oh, I can go to streaming to find some new films that I haven't necessarily seen. I don't have to go to the theater necessarily. Hush maybe slid under the radar. I think as people are checking out The Haunting of Hill House,
I guarantee it'll pop up in the recommended.
Right. So give Hush a try. Definitely give
great, what a Haunting great of Hill House a try.
Because I know how to play the game.
Hey, Sean, is it true that your favorite R&B artist of all time is Husher? Anyways, continue.
Oh God, that hurts so much. So, that's my underrated.
And also, seriously, I do a
talk for a second about Hill House.
I do a top 10 TV show, best TV show list of the year. In the same way that we do top 10 movies list of the year, I do top 10 TV shows.
Sure.
Hill House is in contention for my number one.
Wait,
spot.
Wait, wait, you're only halfway through it. What if it completely traps the bed?
I said in contention.
Okay,
O'Connell. Jesus.
Okay.
I'm
amongst
six
what
ten.
Else?
But, Atlanta and The Americans.
Okay.
I just
Hill House is great.
I just watched an episode that not only proved to me that Flanagan has what it takes to make Dr. Sleep an amazing movie, even though I wasn't even a big fan of the book.
Right.
I think he's one of the most probably talented, at least TV director, horror directors working today.
Right.
That in that episode 6, without getting into details. Is Kevin, back me up, one of the most meticulously, beautifully, unbelievably
well
directed episodes of television I've ever seen.
And the opening tracking shot, I believe, is about 18 minutes, I think. The episode 6 is comprised of, I think, 4 to 6 gigantic tracking shots that are masterfully executed.
Right.
To me, so I will say this. The series is incredible. It starts off... you need to get into it. Like, you need to be able to, just...
Put your phone down.
Yeah. Watch it, because while it is a harsh...
Super watch.
Don't tell me what to do.
No, but while
but
it is
like,
a... While
watch it in the sense that, like, there are people in the background.
Yeah, that I have
there
not...
There are ghosts
in
the background that have not, like, you're focused, like...
They're not presenting
the camera,
to you.
The camera doesn't rack focus into them.
Right.
The camera, or there are no sound effects to make you focus... You're focused on a conversation two people are having.
Yeah.
A ghost steps out to watch them and listen, and then the ghost steps back in. It's terrifying.
So
terrifying.
I'm not saying this in any exaggeratory way, but there's an episode, I want to say it's 4 or 5, where there's a particular ghost that I guess I'll just refer to as the floating man.
That's 4. That's episode 4.
4. In the past week and a half, I've woken up at least 4 of the nights. One of them was last night, and I have to, like a kid, cover my head with my blanket because I'm afraid I'm going to look into a corner and see him coming towards me. And the show is not necessarily, while it is a horror show, it's very much more about grief
and
family.
I've been telling people, this is us in a haunted house.
Right. And that's a great way to put it because you're dealing with, essentially, the premise is that these 5 kids grew up in a house that their parents were fixing up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Hill House.
Right. And essentially the idea is we are cutting back and forth between present day where they all are, which is as adults, and then their experiences as kids. And I think the big rising star from this show is this actress named Victoria Pedretti, who's playing a character called Nell. Episode 5 of the series is all about her storyline, which has become now, I think Jake can agree, the through line to what the show is becoming.
It's very Stephen King-like. Stephen King is all about...
people experiencing things as kids and how it grows up to affect them as adults. It's a very Stephen King theme.
It's which genuinely...
Is why, I mean, Stephen King tweeted that this was the work of genius.
It's genuinely freaky, but in a way that it's not like a haunted house scare,
right,
which what it could have been. It's stuff that sits with you and you don't know it sits with you. So, like, I'm having recurring thoughts of shots of... Whether it be the bent neck lady or
the bent neck lady.
Yeah, it was very there's a lot of things happening.
The bent neck lady.
So I'm on episode 7. My wife and I have a thing where we don't watch, if we're watching a show together, we don't ever watch it apart. So I'm gonna go home and finish it when I get back. But I just watched 6 before I left for Edinburgh. And I'm telling you, episode 5 and 6 was probably 2 of the greatest episodes of TV I've seen in a long time. And I just finished Better Call Saul, which is phenomenal as well.
Well, I want to point out that the star of Hush is Katie Siegel.
Who's Theo.
Who plays Theo.
Who is Flanagan's wife.
Flanagan's wife.
Right.
Also.
Right.
Outstanding. So, yet another reason.
Yeah.
I find it fascinating that you both came around to the fact that Haunting of Hill House is influenced by King, because for next week...
Our
blend game is going to be #King blend.
Wow.
And that's real hard.
And we will debate
because
our favorite Stephen King adaptations.
Movie.
Okay, adaptation or movie?
Well, movie.
Adaptation would imply you can do TV shows like The Stand and things like that.
Oh, I see what you're saying. No, I think it has to be a movie. I don't think it can be a TV show.
Like we can do Castle Rock. Correct. Not that I would do Castle
Rock. You cannot do Castle Rock. It has to be a film.
Oh, yeah. I mean, already Jake's answer is clearly thinner.
Yes.
Hey, for the record, I like it.
So, if you're playing
you
along with
right.
us...
You have to go, thin.
At home. It is
that freaked me out, actually, as a kid.
Right, it's a good movie.
I read that book. And
okay, to be fair, Stephen King didn't write that. Richard Bachman wrote that.
Your pick
on
Twitter.
Wait, we got to clarify here that it's not... Chase said best Graham King movies. This is best.
I believe it's Graham Queen.
See, which I did say to him today, which was great.
You can follow us online. We are at Real Blend, RELBLEND. You never know. One day we might show up in your city and tell you a bar to go to, and
you,
three of us might be there.
Are you aware of, have you guys ever read like Stephen King interviews where he's talked about like his favorite movies of all time? And like specifically his favorite Clint Eastwood film, which I was actually shocked to hear about.
Oh God,
Change King, like Changeling, but Change King.
No, dude,
no.
Sean, wrap it up. Dude.
Jake can be found at Jake's Takes. Kevin can be found at These Painful Puns. Driving
can we give Chase a social media shout out?
Chase, where are you at?
Chase Off. He's at Chase Off.
At Chase Off.
_
NickOverdian.com. I'm at Sean _O'Connell. Of course, you can find us at Real Blend. If you have a King blend and you want to drop it to us, do it at Real Blend or at Real Blend at cinemablend.com. Drop us a review. We're on iTunes, obviously. If you guys want to leave us a review on iTunes, we will read it at the top of the next show. We're at 58 star ratings. We need to get to 100 by the end of the year, or Jake is getting kicked off the show.
No, great.
I'm going to quit long before
then. Which I find very exciting.
Yeah.
And we're going to do a show sometime soon, although we all have some really exciting travel coming up.
And you know Freddie Mercury's favorite Stephen King adaptation,
oh,
right?
Oh, God. Just stop, dude.
The Queen Mile. Get it? Because green?
We hope
but
you all,
he's in A Man Called Queen.
We hope you all
so,
enjoyed
the Queen
this,
Mile.
This week's episode. We will be back very, very soon. We didn't quite hit the 2-hour mark.
How long is it?
But it's an hour and a half.
Oh, dear God.
And it is very, very late in London right now.
It's 1 a.m.
Really,
I haven't slept in 5 days. Forgive me.
Really appreciate everybody tuning in to listen. Thank you very much. We will talk to you soon. And, of course...
Dunkirk.
Solo name.
Hamilton.